Okay. So good morning here in the room, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening for the remote participants. This is the plenary of the CCWG Workstream 2 accountability. And today we will start with a short introduction and make the SY update, etc., and then some administration issues. After that, we will go to the current situation, the review of and confirmation of implementation guidance, and then a coffee break and any other business. So, first of all, is there any SOI update?
Can we move the slides, please?
Next. Okay, next. Okay. Any update on the SOIs? I see none. Okay, let's go now to remind you that we have to stick to the standard of behavior in this meeting. Now, some administration issues, and I will give the floor to Bernie.
Thank you, Tijani. Next slide, please. Next. Next slide. Ah, okay. Thank you. All right. This is probably our shortest administration item we've ever had at the Workstream 2. Hopefully our last one, because there are no meetings going forward and there is no budget going forward. So the budget for Workstream 2 ends on June 30th. And there is obviously some budget for the implementation of the various things, but the continuation of the plenary, there is really no staff support. There is nothing else. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. And I will give the floor to Thomas for the next agenda point.
Thanks very much, Tijani, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I see Sebastian's hand is raised. Sebastian, you want to speak?
Yes, please. Thank you very much. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. I raised my hand. I was hoping that you will start to ask if anybody has something to change to the agenda. I know that we may have time to send to you, but I don't understand really what is under the subject of reviewing the... can you put the agenda, please, because I don't have in front of me. But reviewing the implementation, if we are not yet at this stage for some of the issue, and I think we need to have some time to discuss both comments where we didn't have a chance to discuss the comments of our report, and we are going straight to the part of the implementation. I would like to suggest that we give some time to discuss comments we received as on our report.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. And you are talking about the agenda item between 9 and 10:30. That is the point where we are going to discuss the various points about implementation guideline, and that will be an opportunity to discuss in depth the concerns but also other comments that have been made surrounding the remaining four open items. So even if we're talking about implementation, that will be the part where we are going to discuss the remaining questions surrounding the final points. I hope that that makes it clear. Now, I'd like to add one or two sentences to what Bernie has said. And, you know, you may have wondered why we didn't have plenary calls before we convened in Panama, and why there is no plan to schedule further plenary meetings. Now, as you know, all of our sub-team reports have gone through public comment. As you know, we have put everything together in one cohesive final report, and we've asked the public about concerns regarding inconsistencies. So we're now in the process of being ready to have the chartering organizations approve our recommendations or our final report. And during that process, it turned out that the board had concerns with a very limited number of recommendations that we put forward, and there was no plan whatsoever, and I think it would be very difficult to do of our group to reopen the discussions about the substance of the recommendations. And this is why we have asked staff, and in particular Bernie, who I think we all owe a great deal of gratitude for taking care of that process, primarily to discuss with ICANN what the root cause of their concerns was and how we can tackle those concerns without having to reopen the discussion on the substance of the recommendations. And these discussions were ongoing, so there wasn't really anything substantive that we had to report, and we didn't want to waste everyone's time to make you dial in through each and every day and night time to jump on a call in the plenary with us only to find out that we didn't have a final answer for you. And this is why we're going to have this discussion today. This is why we are not going to have the chartering organizations approve today, because the discussion has not really been finalized. So that will take place after Panama. Unfortunately, that means that we will not be able to stick to our original timeline, do a little roadshow to the chartering organizations and ask them for their support. But this will actually have to take place after this group has officially disbanded and after this group has had its budget. That doesn't mean, of course, that we are just fading away and that nothing else is going to happen. So I have been reassured by Bernie that Bernie, although he will take on other commitments, Bernie will still be there to assist with this. Right? So our budget ends at the end of this month, but we will still have some support to get the remaining parts of our work completed, i.e. navigate the process of approval with the chartering organizations, with the board, and then subsequently, and this is something that you have already been informed about, when we have to do our implementation guidance. And so to speak, what we're seeing today with the discussion around implementation is sort of a first taste of what the implementation support that we're going to give will look like in the next couple of years. There will be questions by the board. There will certainly be questions by staff on how to implement the almost 100 recommendations that our group came up with. And what we're doing now is just put that in front of the bracket and issue implementation guidelines on four of the recommendations that we came up with. So I hope that this helps you put things into perspective a little bit. I should also say that we wanted to have a party in Panama. Coming from Germany, I had my little party yesterday when we won the game already. But I think that this group really deserves some official ending of this exercise. You know, this sort of brought the community together, but it even brought the participants of this group together over the last 2.5-3 years or so. And we should ask ICANN for some budget to appropriately celebrate that. We didn't ask for that today because we didn't want to count the chicken before they hatch, I guess, is the sentence that native speakers are using for that. So we will defer that until a later point in time. So I hope that this, you know, helps put some concerns at rest. It's not like we're going to disappear and that we're leaving this process uncontrolled. We will have some staff resources. We will have the co-chairs still available to help with this, and I hope that we can also tap on your expertise. Let's move to the next slide, please. So, I've said a few things that I wanted to say to this slide already, but we need to make sure that the approval process runs smoothly, right? That when we hand over our package to the chartering organizations and subsequently to the board, that we reduce the risk of any pushback or hiccups or other back and forth. You will remember that in the bylaws, we put in a clause whereby Workstream 2 recommendations can only be rejected with a two-thirds majority inside the board. And this is quite some leverage that we have. And if the board rejects our recommendations, and they can only reject recommendations based on global public interest considerations, then a process of deliberation between our group and the ICAM board starts. And we have been signaled by the board that on the limited catalog of four items that we're going to extensively discuss today, that the board has global public interest concerns. So if we wanted to follow process strictly, we could say, we don't care, we're going to do our bit, we have pushed everything in front of the community through public comment periods a couple of times, so now we're going to wrap this up, send it to the chartering organizations. The chartering organizations will hopefully say yes, and then what happens with the board? It may well be that the board then says, well, we told you early in the process that we do have some concerns, and therefore we're going to wave the global public interest flag, and then we have to deal with it at that point in time. And therefore, we thought it would be wise for this group, for the community's resources, for resources that every one of you thankfully dedicate to this process, to try understand what the global public interest concerns are that the board has, and to try to see whether we can find language that explains what our recommendations mean in order to put the global public interest concerns at rest. And this is a dialogue that we kicked off at the last ICAM meeting. So as you know, we had a meeting with a few board members and with a few staff members, and we said, okay, out of this huge number of recommendations, we only have four where there are issues. That's great news. And then we said, okay, let's try to understand between the last meeting and Panama what we can do in order to find appropriate language by means of an implementation guideline versus reopening the discussion about the substance of the recommendation, and whether we can find implementation guidelines that would help remove the concerns there are, yet ensuring that we preserve what the recommendations that have been so thoroughly vetted by this group and the wider community, to preserve those in order to make sure that nothing is really diluted. So that's where we are. This is why we need to discuss the implementation guidelines. I want to make sure to convey the position from the co-chairs as transparently as possible. What you will hear from us in our reporting with Bernie is a position that the co-chairs would like to support in terms of these implementation guidelines, but we want to make sure that everyone is heard with their concerns and that the group is united more or less as much as we can in adopting these implementation guidelines. We hope that we will have at least one board member for parts of this discussion available to share ideas about what the concerns are. But we think it would be good to end this discussion with these implementation guidelines and then be able to submit the report with the implementation guidelines to the chartering organizations for their approval. And again, I think this is something where we need to apply the usual die-in-the-ditch test again. You know, so I know that particularly those who have been working hard on the recommendations don't want them to be commented by third party that haven't been at the table all the time. But so let's try to focus on what we actually wanted to achieve with the recommendations, and not that much the words that we have used in our report to get that message across, because that message seems to have been misunderstood to a certain extent by those who should read it. You know, we want to improve ICANN's accountability. I think we've gotten very far with that, and I hope that we can resolve the last remaining issues. Okay, so that's the first half of the slide already, and the second part, and this is going to be very brief. Yeah, I will move to the hands in a moment, but just very brief, and I think all of you know this by now, but the work that the IRP implementation oversight team is doing, with the great help from David McAuley, who's sitting over there, that has been put into the Workstream 2 package, but technically it's still a remaining piece of work out of Workstream 1. So the budget limitations, the timeline, does not apply to that particular part of the work, right? So that's going to be work in progress. Everything's going to be unchanged for that part of our work package. So there are two hands. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to update my Adobe Connect in time, so maybe you can help me. Cavus is first. Cavus, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, co-chairs, and thank you, distinguished colleagues and friends. Happy to see you again here. Thomas, I think perhaps it may be necessary that what you said plus some other additional information be included in some sort of either attached to your statement. For many people, they're raising the same questions. What happened that the activities of the plenary of the CCWG decayed and slowed down in a way that were they tired of the work? Were they not necessary? We had announcement of plenary. We have cancellation after cancellation. So some of the reasons you have given is useful to provide information to the people who are not closely following the CCWG, because this Workstream 2 was very important. What I get from your information and statement, maybe today CCWG physical meeting will be disbanded, but CCWG will not completely finish its activities because there are many other things that may come up. Any requests or comments from charter organizations, anything about the implementation of recommendations, not those you have raised today by the board. So it means that we do not totally close the activities, but we would not have presumably any more face-to-face meeting. This is one point that I wanted to raise. It is better if it is explained. And secondly, with respect to this implementation principle, also we would like to know the origin of that. I understood that it's coming from some of the comments made by the board, but perhaps we would like to know how you come up that you just took the initiative that without discussing with the community, you start to write something, and for which we thank you very much and thank the ICANN staff to provide this draft. But perhaps it is better also to explain that, because we would like that CCWG as started with dynamism and continued with dynamism also not be fade out totally without necessary explanation to the public that what has happened and what is going to be on. This is the third point is IoT. IoT, yes, it continues its work. I raised some point to David that I look into the bylaws and there are some other activities that we have to undertake. And even after the implementations team work finished during the IRP, there is a need to have some connections or activities with the IoT team. So this is the things, but I would like that if possible, the co-chair tries to make some sort of explanation to the public that we know what we are today and what position that we are, but not those that some people they know, some other people they don't know. Some of the questions that are raised, in fact, was asked some of my colleagues, and I did not have any clear answer until I heard from you today, and I thank you very much for that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Cavus, for your questions. Now, with respect to the first point, you will note that in agenda item number 9, we have a discussion about the co-chair statement, and this will be an opportunity for us to inform the community about the process, about, you know, how the work of this group ends, how we're still going to help with implementation. So I hope that on the procedural aspects, we will be able to shed some light on the overall process and let the community know that this group hasn't just gone dormant or out of existence, but that we're actually doing our job. With respect to the idea of the implementation guidelines, you will remember that when we last convened at ICANN 61, we informed the plenary about our meeting with the board and that we tried to that we will try to find a way to address the concerns without reopening the recommendations, and that this would be done with the tool of implementation guidelines, because that's something that would formally be attached to the report. So the board has something to lean on when it actually comes to the implementation. At the same time, you know, we would have a low barrier, easy to implement way to address the concerns. And on the disbanding of the group, maybe one last sentence. I think we will not per se invite to more plenary meetings. So we have discussed the composition of the implementation oversight team during ICANN 61. We've also said that the co-chairs would still be available to help with the approval process. So I think we have good enough instructions from the plenary on how to navigate this process. Everything has been agreed with the plenary in terms of next steps. So we will try to take care of this whole process as good as we can, and only should there be major hiccups that we don't foresee to happen at the moment, we will potentially reconvene this working group, as has happened in other instances in the ICANN world. But unless you get an explicit invitation to join a meeting of a reconvened cross-community working group, you know, this is actually going to be the last plenary that we will hold. So Steve's hand was raised as well. Steve, please.
Thank you. Steve Delabianca with Commercial Stakeholders Group. I think it was a point of good fortune that we learned that of 100 recommendations, the board was raising a concern of only 4. And that was an opportunity for us. And as one of the rapporteurs of the 9 streams, I participated in Puerto Rico in the meeting with board and legal as we tried to work through the implementation questions. And I have to say, Cavus, you would be very, very pleased that it was completely focused on understanding if the board had concerns early, as opposed to waiting until chartering organizations had approved it, only to then learn that the details weren't clear from the recommendations themselves. So I think we've done, and the co-chairs have done this process exactly right by trying to surface concerns now rather than later. So having said that, I think the co-chairs are being premature in concluding at the beginning of this meeting that we can't get it done this week. Let's be aspirational and understand that we have only 4 elements of implementation guidelines that we need to resolve as a plenary before we would recommend our recommendations and the implementation guidance as a package to the chartering organizations. So let's keep hope alive that we could come to that conclusion in the next 3-4 hours. It can be done, and I realize that the outcome of that could go multiple ways. It might be that we in this plenary would decide that we differ with the board on implementation guidelines. That doesn't mean you've died in a ditch. It just means you're at the edge of the ditch. And it may well not descend into the ditch many months from now after the chartering organizations have approved and the board takes a formal position. Another outcome is that we decide that the implementation technicalities, the guidelines that the board is willing to agree and embrace, are acceptable for us. They're significant enough improvement on the status quo that we choose to move forward knowing there will be zero controversy once the chartering organizations hopefully approve it. And the third alternative is that we would work something out in amending these implementation guidelines today. However, that step would require the presence of a board representative with the authority to say, yes, that would be fine, because it would be frustrating for us to modify a few words in the implementation guidelines only to learn that board and legal haven't had an opportunity to look at it. So it could be that that would be the delay in our ability to move forward. But, Thomas, I would ask you to keep hope alive. Let's charge this group to see if we can get it done this morning. Thank you.
I'll do it, Steve. Some of you may know Bob the Builder, and when we started Workstream 1, I was asked to speak at the European Communities Congregation at an ICANN meeting, and then I said, well, people might think that we can't get this done, but all of you who know Bob the Builder, you know, he has this energizing pep talk whenever they have a project in front of them, saying, can we do it? And then the whole team says, yes, we can. And so in that spirit, I suggest we move to the substantive discussion, and I'd like to hand over to Jordan to take us through the first of the 4 points.
Thanks, Thomas. Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone here and online. My name is Jordan Carter, one of the three co-chair amigos at the front. If we can move the slide on to the next slide, please. I don't know, who am I looking at for slides? Right, okay. We're doing ombuds first, are we? Yep.
Is Chris here? You welcome?
No.
We proceed as is.
Okay.
Okay, so the way that this is going to work is for each of these four topics, one of us will facilitate the discussion and introduction, but Bernie is going to do the substantive talking. That might be a bit trickier on this one, but he'll have a go. So, Ombuds Panel, is there a slide for this?
Next slide, please.
There we go. Bernie, I'll hand it over to you and give us an intro.
Thank you, Jordan. Hi, everyone. This is Bernie Turcotte, for those that don't know me. You will remember that the Ombuds subgroup was being led by our rapporteur, Sébastien Bachelet, and that we worked our way through that using the external evaluation report. If you will remember, we started the work, and then as part of ATRT2, there was a recommendation to have an external evaluation of the Ombuds function. A few months after we started our work, there was an agreement that our group, led by Sébastien, would take over that external evaluation, which they did, and the group decided to wait for the results of the external evaluation before proceeding with a lot of its work. The external evaluation was completed. It seemed very good to the group, and basically the group accepted all 11 recommendations from the external evaluation. In accepting those 11 recommendations, there was a concern raised by the board on the issue of recommendation 8, I believe, of instituting a panel to assist the ombudsman, not with practical cases, but just as independent support. As part of that back and forth while we were preparing the report, the subgroup moved to changing the external evaluator's recommendation to making it that this panel would still be constituted but would be advice to the board only, would not be decision-making, in hopes it would address the concerns the board had. Am I essentially correct with that, Sebastian?
Thank you, Bernie. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Yes, I just want to add one point, is that we try, as it was the recommendation from the co-chair, not to make any change into the bylaws. Therefore, it was also one of the reasons why the recommendation from the reviewer were taken and rewrite, not in the substance, but in a way to allow no changing the bylaws. And it's where we have some difficulty to be understood by the board, because they say you must change the bylaw and we say we don't want, then it's part of the where we are today. But yes, you're right.
Thank you, Sebastian. So basically we completed our recommendations in all areas in Puerto Rico. And on 14 May, the board delivered a letter to Workstream 2 stating they had four areas of concerns, which if we could not find some way to deal with, they would probably have to invoke global public interest to reject these four recommendations. One of these four recommendations was, of course, recommendation 8 from the Ombuds about creating a panel for the Ombuds. As part of the general strategy of this, many of you will remember that, as Thomas has mentioned, there was a meeting with representatives of the board in Puerto Rico to talk about these issues. And there was an initial discussion, and it was agreed that the board would confirm those issues. Once those issues were confirmed in that May 14 letter, the co-chairs requested staff look at defining implementation guidance, i.e. how to interpret the recommendations for implementation, which might address the board concerns and would allow us to not change the recommendations. Because let's be very clear, if there are substantial changes to the recommendations, we probably would have to reconstitute the subgroup. We probably would have to go to another public consultation, and then we would again have to redo this. So we're trying to be realistic and try to wrap this up on the timing. So staff went off trying to find an expression of implementation guidance which would respect the original requirements of the recommendation and might address the concerns of the board in how to implement this and therefore avoid a rejection by the board if it gets past the chartering organizations and is submitted to the board as is. Just to be clear, for those that don't remember, if the board does invoke global public interest to reject any recommendations, all of those details about what actually happens are clearly spelled out in the bylaws. You will remember, as part of Workstream 1, for those that were there, that we insisted there be a very specific protocol as to, can you lower your sound, as to what happens if the board does invoke global public interest. And as our friend Steve Del Bianco noted, we also have a much higher threshold than anywhere else in the ICANN approval process. It does require two-thirds of the board to agree to reject a recommendation on global public interest for our things. But if they do reach that,
okay? We start a whole other process where there is feedback loops, where there is Workstream 2, and we might have several months and many, many months of work to wrap that up. But the reality is, at the end of the day, if we do not come to some sort of an acceptable solution, if the board goes to another two-thirds vote, they could reject it, that recommendation finally. So that's just the reality of where we are. So staff went on to see, next slide, please, what they could do. I won't bother you with reading the full recommendation. It basically says install a panel and what it can do. And we worked on various elements of refining what items of the recommendation meant what to who. And we thought that we would come to some sort of an agreement, and we did for most of the parts. Next slide, please. This implementation guidance was not published because basically we were working on it with the co-chairs until about 10 o'clock last night. So you're seeing it here for the first time, not because we didn't want to show it to you, but it's a rather fluid situation. Next slide, please. So I'll go through this since this hasn't been published. The Ombuds panel is not meant to be a decision-making body. We agreed on that. We're just making that clear. It's only there to assist the board or relevant board committee with specific tasks enumerated in the recommendation. The panel is specifically prohibited from getting involved in any matter before the Ombuds. The Ombuds shall not seek, even on anonymized terms, guidance from the panel on any matter before the Ombuds. The panel will only have the following specifically enumerated powers. This was agreed. This was stated in the original recommendation. We're just clarifying it. Next slide, please. These are the enumerated terms. Contribute to the selection process for a new Ombuds, which would meet the various requirements of the board and community, including diversity. Recommending candidates for the position of Ombuds to the board. Recommending terms of probation to the board for the new Ombuds. Only at the request of the board, recommend to the board firing an Ombuds for cause. You'll note this is in bracket, and we'll go through the explanation of that in a minute. Contribute to the external evaluation of the Ombuds every 5 years. Only at the request of the board, make recommendations regarding any potential involvement. Next slide, please. That got cut off. But in any non-classical Ombuds questions, and that was in the original recommendation that was made very clear. There was a lot of concern from the ICANN side on the independence issue of this panel. And we tried to address this in the following, because in Puerto Rico, we had agreed to make this as the notion was really to assist the board, make it as independent as possible. So the following text was added in the potential implementation guidance. Additionally, a formal process to select the panel members should be created to first ensure that candidates must have significant experience and complete independence from SOs and ACs. The requirement for ICANN experience is secondary. The selection process may be designed in any appropriate means to achieve independence, such as by selection by the board, an independent recruitment firm, or other appropriate process. Regardless of the process which is selected, the ICANN board should post details regarding the process that will be utilized. So really, the notion is there's great concern by the board, because you will remember that the Ombuds reports to the board. This is not a staff position. The Ombuds reports directly to the board, and for the Ombuds to be able to do its job, it must be independent. It must be seen as independent. And so thereby, if we're having a panel, there is, if you will, serious concern that there not be any questions that would bring that independence into question. That's the core of the implementation advice. If we could go back one slide, please. We have in square brackets, only at the request of the board, recommend to the board the firing of an ombuds for cause. So basically, you will note that there are two bold statements there. The other one has similarly noted only at the request of the board make recommendations regarding potential involvement in things that are not classically ombuds things. And we received word as we were working on this that the board was so concerned about the firing clause that they were asking us to completely remove it. So the co-chairs discussed this last night and basically could not agree that this was providing implementation guidance. It was actually changing a recommendation if you're actually removing a section. Now, there may be actually reasons that support removing this, and regarding the true independent nature, if you've got this panel, there are many issues surrounding this, but I think the co-chairs felt that we needed to bring this to you and see what the plenary felt about it. Did I summarize that properly, Jordan?
Yes, Bernie, thanks. The only other thing I would add just on that, the firing an ombuds for cause, is that we're operating on a few assumptions about what the board's concern is here. And what it seems to me to tie down to is that in the ombuds independence is important, and the board has some responsibilities as directors in an organization in dealing with any decision making around that in a clean way that doesn't get compromised or broken by parallel processes. So it seems like that's the motivating concern. It would have been strongly and deeply preferable if there was someone from the board in the room to actually talk us through directly what the concerns were. But I kind of, you've kind of summarized the advice well. I think we need to get that advice on the list as soon as we can so people can have a read of it as well. There are some hands up in the room, so we'll start with those. Steve DelBianco, you're first.
Thank you. Steve DelBianco with the Commercial Stakeholders Group. The description that you've given reminds us that the purpose of this panel isn't to be substantive. It won't look at actual rulings of the ombudsman. That its sole purpose is to signal the community is displeased with the performance of the current ombudsman. Now, I know that it may contribute to the idea of hiring a new one. I get that. But its sole purpose is for the community to signal that we are really not happy with the way the ombudsman is performing. And on that signal, the board may consider a recommendation for probation, may consider a recommendation for other forms of discipline, readjustment, or even dismissal and replacement of the ombudsman. So with that in mind, I don't understand the board's objecting to the composition of the panel as representing the ACs and SOs. Here's what I'm suggesting. You don't need to be an expert in the ombudsman functions to be able to simply relay the fact that the community really thinks the ombudsman is doing a terrible job. It's not reviewing the substance of the ombudsman's decisions, so they need not be experts in what ombudsmans do. They simply need to be able to relay that the community is extremely displeased with the performance and is recommending some path of action. And it's the CSG where we're full of business people that really are sort of strapped to the reality that boards and corporations do the employee and contractor relationships, not outside panels. So I'm confident the CSG would support the notion that the board can't be told to fire the ombudsman or any employee, but the board can receive a recommendation. And if the recommendation is from the ACs and SOs, it has been duly approved, the board would be wise to consider that. But there would be no legal obligation for the board to follow through, and nor does I think this recommendation imply any legal obligation. So to summarize, I think the board is right that they shouldn't be told to fire an individual, that is employed by the board. But number two, the board is wrong to insist on the composition of a panel that really only represents the view of the community and doesn't need to substantively review decisions. Therefore, they do not need to be independent of the community. They want to be representative of the community. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I think I disagree with you on both counts on that one, actually, in this sense, taking liberties with my chairing role here, that in terms of the overall independence of the ombuds function, the board's feedback has been very clear about the independence of that panel, whatever its role is. With the sort of, if people want to raise concerns about the ombudsman, at the moment there is already a way for them to do that, right? That I'm assuming there's a way for them to do that. I don't know what it is, but whatever board committee has oversight over the ombuds function for the organization, I'm assuming that if there was community concern raised by an SO or an AC or a stakeholder group, there was an allegation of bad behavior or something like this, because this is always about there being a cause, that the board would investigate that. And my impression from what I've heard, feedback-wise through Bernie and so on, is that the concern is that there not be a group with a special standing to raise those concerns in a parallel process with the board in case it interferes with their duty to look at any allegations independently, because as you said, one of the realizations from business is that the board needs to take responsibility for managing those contracting relationships. So I think we might end up getting to the same place. So I just wanted to sort of nudge that nuance that way. The next is on the list is Alan and then David and then Sebastien, according to the order in my Adobe room. So we'll go through that order. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. Alan Greenberg. First a verification. I haven't been very active in the ombudsman section, so I want to make sure my interpretation is correct. The fourth bullet that is in bold and bracketed, that is a recommendation that was in our report and the board is asking it to be us to remove it. Is that correct?
In the recommendation is the part that does not have only the request of the board. It's recommend to the board firing an ombuds for cause. Okay. The implementation advice guidance we were providing was, or proposing, was only at the request of the board. Okay. When we proposed that, the answer came back, no, we can't do that for this one. Okay, but we can do that for the second one. You seem puzzled.
Okay, so what we had originally was recommend to the board.
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay, the board is asking us to add the phrase at the beginning. No?
No, we were trying, the board had a concern with this specific element. We tried to deal with it by adding only at the request of the board. That did not work. Okay, what came back was simply remove this, please.
Okay. If we had succeeded and convinced them to allow us to add only at the request of the board,
right,
should the board never choose to exercise that request, that is, has the net same result as removing it altogether?
We tried
to make... Is that not correct?
We tried to make that case, and there was a feeling that having that there as a tool, the board would be obliged in certain circumstances to use it.
Okay. I would suggest that even though some future board might feel obliged to use it, it gives the board full discretion to never use it, and therefore that is functionally equivalent to removing that clause altogether. And I would claim that, therefore, we are fighting over something that is not very important because it's out of our control. Once we put that first clause in, it is out of our control. It is up to the board, and it may never be. The board may choose to never use it, and therefore it is functionally equivalent to removing it, and I would claim that would be acceptable. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. The next on the list is David.
Thanks, Jordan. David McCauley speaking for the record. And I had a number of concerns with
this, and I was somewhat sympathetic to the board's concerns, but Bernie, my hat's off to you and staff and the co-chairs for what you did last night and what came out, because I think it goes a long way to resolving at least the concerns that I had. So I really have a question, and that is, in discussing all of this, has there been attention paid to, or clarification around the cost of all of this? And I'll mention that bylaw section 5.1 says that ICANN will maintain the office of the ombudsman, and that will be managed by the ombudsman, including I would take it, all of the cost of this advisory panel. Or has that been discussed? Have you gotten to that level of detail? Once a panel like this is created, we all know that it tends to, I would think, it would expand and want this, that, and the other.
The recommendation, if you read it, is very limited as to the Constitution, and so I don't think there is any thought to expansion.
Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you. The next on the list is Sebastian. Sebastian, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Sebastian Bachelet. When I put my name to be the rapporteur of this subgroup, I was thinking that it was not a contentious issue. It's why I didn't put my name on the diversity panel or SOIC accountability or other like that. It was supposed to be easy work to be done and not to take too much of my time and of my energy. But it's happened that it's it changed with the fact that we add, and it was a good addition, the ATRT2 recommendation to have a review of the ombuds. And therefore, we take that on board, and I want to stress again, and I want to stress that to the board, that those recommendations are not from the community. They are coming from the external reviewer. It's and I know that we could have different view on the work done by some external reviewer compared to other, but I can assure you that this one done their work. I would say perfectly. They've done their work. And now to the substance. I would like very much to have the second page of this recommendation into brackets, because I disagree. And I am not taking my hat as a rapporteur, as I am. This group is disbanded. If we have to reconvene it, we will see, but for the moment I speak just on my behalf. I want to remind you that the objective of this panel was to have an accountability advice mechanism that would be more capable of guiding the ombuds. It was also to be sure that it was more and more independent from the board also. Board is considering to the independence to the community, and we are considering the independence, the current dependence from the ombuds to the board. The second, and in that direction, was to relieve the governance committee of the job of oversight. It's maybe, and it was, I guess, something very specific to the ICANN organization and the way we are working. Therefore, I think if we take the proposal of the report I discovered, like you just now, then my comments are just hot. But I don't see why this panel can't suggest to the board to fire an ombuds. It will not be the job they will have, the main job they will have to do. The main job will have to advise the ombuds office to do the work and not to have this ombuds fired. But if there are people from the community who have concern, if there are people from the board who have concern about the work done by the current office of the ombudsman, sorry, not the current one, but the one at the moment of they will have trouble, it's good to have one place to give that feedback and that they can act on that. For the second, only at the request of the board, I am not sure that this recommendation was a recommendation 11, and it was because we tried to work with other subgroups like the document DRDP things and other to see how the ombudsman can be involved, and the question was to how the ombudsman could be involved needs to be seen for each of the topics, and I don't see why it could be only the board who decides that this topic must be handled by the ombudsman or not. It must be also from the community, and if we want to be sure to have not to talk about the community as something nothing we can say the enhanced community, it could be one way, the chair of the SONAC, whatever, but I don't see why only the board. And if we can go to the next slide, please. I'm sorry to be a little bit long, but I think the idea was to have a panel composed of people with good knowledge of the ombudsman function. It's why the suggestion to have ex-ombudsman or current ombudsman from outside of ICANN, and to have in the panel some people who are not representing SO and AC, but who have a good knowledge of the ICANN as a whole and who understand what is the job of the ombudsman, to allow this group to function with enough knowledge, both from ICANN way of doing and the ombudsman function. It's why if I have to have a suggestion to change the composition of the of this panel and to help the board to decrease their question about the independence to SONAC, I would suggest that we may have I don't know, it's out of my mind here, but for example three from ombuds function and one from ICANN, from us for the ICANN community, and one from the board, and it could be the chair of the board governance committee. And if the board is very, very concerned, we can still say that the board could be the chair of this panel if they wish, by the representative of the chair of the advisory of the board governance committee. Okay, I will stop here, but I am a little bit concerned that we were not able to participate to this exchange, and especially as a rapporteur, I would have been very happy to help with finding a solution. But we are where we are, and I hope that we can find a way to go outside of this situation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sebastian. Bernie wants to make a comment on one part of what you said.
Regarding recommendation 11, I understood your comment to say it's only the board. You know, that last part there where there is, if we can go back one slide, please. Only at the request of the board, is only about the panel being involved in this. It doesn't change recommendation 11, which says the community has to be involved in it. So this is only about the panel being involved in that decision, and the board would agree that if they ask the panel, that's fine, but if not, then that's another thing. It does not in any way change recommendation 11, which was accepted as is and requires the community to be involved in any such decision. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. I'm going to move on with the speaking list, on which I have Thomas and Cheryl. Thomas.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Now, let's step back for a moment and see how we got to this discussion and what the origin of the concern potentially was. The way I see it, and this is not a co-chair position, first of all, Sebastian, I think you mentioned that the possibility to request the firing of the ombudsman was in the independent evaluators report. I think it wasn't. I think it came from the subgroup. But then what we want to achieve with this recommendation is that this independent board can express its dismay with how the ombudsman works. And we've used language that suggests that the independent panel can recommend to the board that the ombudsman should be fired. What does that mean? Even if it is purely advisory, it puts pressure on the board. It puts an expectation on the board that the board will honor that recommendation. And I do understand that the board has some concerns with respect to the independence, that's one thing, but also with regard to its fiduciary duties. Because if they are supposed to terminate a contract for allegedly good cause, where at the end of the day there is no such good cause, that could even put the board and ICANN in trouble. And so how can we preserve the essence of what we try to say, i.e. the board can say this guy or this person doesn't do its job correctly, without using the exact language of firing, which causes the board's concerns? And I think that Alan was spot on. If we say the board can reach out to the independent evaluators and ask for their view, nothing prevents them from doing so. At the same time, so in this one direction, it works. If the board chooses to ask the panel can respond. Then we also have something in there that the panel helps with the review of the ombuds function, so they can put their dismay on how things worked into their report according to that clause. So it works in that direction as well. And that begs the question whether we shouldn't just explain that the firing language was our vehicle to convey that the panel can talk to the quality of the ombudsperson's work, but that firing sort of puts the board into a difficult situation, and that therefore we chose to clarify that this can be conveyed through other channels. And then we explained that it can be done, as I said, either via the board reaching out to the panel and asking for their advice on this particular point, or the panel informing the board in the course of their evaluation. So we would maintain the spirit. We could remove the firing language, and the problem could potentially be resolved. That's my take on it.
Thanks, Thomas. I'll move to Cheryl, and then Caboos, and then Alan.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. I'm in total agreement with you, Thomas, and I think that's also supportive of what Alan was suggesting. I see no downside to us removing the square bracketed language, and I think if we move in that direction, there is enough safety nets in the other language for us to get to the intentions of what I think the spirit of what our work was going to do. So I'd be happy to actually agree to remove the square bracketed text in this situation. Obviously, we all need to decide what we want to do with that as yet. If you can just move to the next slide, please, in terms of the independent ombuds panel. This is a really important piece that needs to perhaps be worked out in the minutiae more in the implementation. I can live with this language, don't get me wrong, but I also feel that having the ICANN experience is actually important. I am uncomfortable with it being, in inverted commas, secondary. However, if it stays there, there's many ways to skin that cat. But I did want it on the record that I personally think the design of the panel should have a quotient of ICANN experience. That certainly, from my memory, and I believe this agrees with what Sebastian was saying, what we were thinking in the ruminations of our work track. And I don't think there's a downside to that with the limited nature and tight description of purpose. I don't think this is a panel that will extend. I know, you know, there was a suggestion earlier that this may, like many panels, expand. I don't think this is one that is going to be guilty of that. I think this is a tight and controlled panel. But from my perspective, I would like to see a clear quotient of specific ICANN ACSO Empower Community input. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Sorry, I'm just flicking back to check my my speaking list. Caboose is next on the list.
Thank you, Jordan. I think we should not start a new round of discussion about the whole issue from the very beginning. They're very fresh in the 24th of June here. The only thing that we need to maintain certain balance between the authority of the board and the scope of the panels and so on. We should not start to have a new arrangement and so on. I don't agree with those suggesting that the board chair this panel. I don't agree with those saying that somebody said that community has lost confidence because there is no mechanism to seek that confidence not being given by the community. How we reach that? So perhaps you need a little bit more to simplify the matter and to wrap up the discussions and continue for the next topic. Otherwise, we will have the discussions of the subgroup being restarted here at the plenary. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. The next two speakers are Alan and Malcolm. Alan?
Thank you very much, Alan Greenberg. 2 points. Number one, I agree with Cheryl that the panel should have ICANN experience. That doesn't mean every member has to have ICANN experience, but there must be significant ICANN experience on that panel, because otherwise I think we'll go off in a random direction. If we can go back to the previous slide. If I understood Thomas correctly, he was saying that removing the fourth bullet, the bracketed bold text, could be acceptable because of the fifth bullet, that is, the panel already has the ability to input into the evaluation of the ombudsman. The fault in that of that logic is on timing. It could well be that the position that they are in is after the first year of a new ombudsperson, and they realize this person is really going off the track, and they don't have any recourse to do anything until 5 years is up. And I would suggest that we could replace the fourth bullet with the board has, the panel has the ability to request that the board initiate a review out of the five-year sequence. And that gives the panel the ability to bring to the attention of the board the fact that they have a problem, and perhaps that could be addressed through such a review, evaluation rather. So that may well be a way of getting of addressing the timing problem and making it more acceptable. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And now my AW room has crashed, so I don't know who's next on the list. Laurie is on the list. Laurie.
Yes, Laurie Schulman for the record. I just wanted to make a comment about community experience versus non-community experience. I would definitely advocate for balance here. I think one of the biggest criticisms that ICANN has from an external point of view is that we're insular. And while this is about self-governance, I think it's very, very important that we have outside points of view, particularly when it comes to an ombuds function. I think it's important in terms of the independence itself and the appearance of independence. If you weigh too heavily in terms of community experience, I feel just the opposite could happen, that there's a built-in bias You can talk to members of the community. You can learn about process. There's a lot an informed participant can do to get themselves up to what would be to be a good knowledge of ICANN ethos. But that's very different from being able to evaluate what is working properly in terms of a functional ombudsman role. And I also want to ask a question, a comment I have to something Steve had said. Again, I'm a rapporteur for a different group, but I have read all the reports, and I have been involved in comments on all the reports. And I didn't take it that this was solely about the community being able to weigh in on the performance of an individual ombudsman. I was under the impression it's about as much function as it would be any sort of individual's role. I mean, we're looking at two issues here, how the office functions and perhaps how an individual functions within that office. And I'm not sure I'm hearing that layered approach now, or perhaps I'm adding too many layers in my own interpretation. Thank you.
The problem with all of these topics is that there are many layers which one can add or subtract. Look, I've got two more speakers, and just to let you know, we're probably going to head for a slightly earlier start to the coffee break after this discussion, so we can work on trying to get some language together that reflects the really helpful contributions that we've been having here. But in the meantime, Malcolm, please go ahead.
No, sorry, I'm struggling here. My apologies. I thought I'd taken myself out of the queue. I'd been persuaded by Cavuz's criticism of my suggestion, so no. I yield the floor.
Removing is possible. Thanks. Tijani, you're in the list.
Thank you. I saw your hand, Sebastian. Do you want to speak before me? Okay, thank you. So I'd like to thank you for all these comments. They are all valuable comments. I'd like to remind you the problem. The problem is that we have recommendations that are final, that have been approved, and that have passed the public comment. And we have, on the other hand, some issues, some concern from the board about 2 points, only 2 points. The first one is the independence of the panel through its composition, and the second point is about the ability of the panel to recommend firing the ombuds. So I would like to ask you, please, to concentrate your comments on these two issues and try to find, because we are trying to find a way to address the concern of the board through the implementation guidance. So try to find a way, trying to help us find this this mechanism to address those two concerns through the implementation guidance. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Tijani. I just want to make a political point and then a process point. When I was looking at all of this ombud stuff as someone who paid very little attention to this topic as we were going, my underlying assumption was that what we were trying to help do was insulate the ombuds from any day-to-day pressures from within the ICANN system. And so the point of this panel was to insulate the ICANN ombudsman from the board. I think at the core of some of the concerns the board is raising is a worry that actually the way that the recommendations come together might end up giving the ombuds less independence and creating more pressures from the community on the ombuds. So I would never have even conceived of that as being a problem, because for me you're trying to protect them from the group with power in the organization. The group with power in the organization for the ombudsman is the board. So, you know, yay my naivety in the ICANN way of doing things, I guess. So that's why this is difficult stuff to juggle and get right. So there is a reason for the trickiness here, and we need to get the language right. On the process point, I am personally very loath for us to do anything that involves changing the recommendations, because I don't want us to go to another public comment. And what is on the screen in front of you in that square bracket, the thing after the equal sign, recommend to the board firing an ombuds for cause, is a recommendation. That is in the recommendations. That is text that is in the recommendations. And so what we now need to do up here is try and find some language that looks at all of the language in these recommendations and sees if we can do something. And I think we can, because recommendation 5.8 says that ICANN should establish an ombuds advisory panel. And then 5.8.2, of which that bullet point is one, says the panel should be responsible for. So in a world of shoulds, I think we can probably find some language to nuance this that reflects down into the next recommendation, 5.9, which says that the ombuds should only be able to be terminated with cause as its second bullet point. So the cause thing is there and well established. And I think we can probably find something in the should. And I guess I just want to put on record my view, and if anyone disagrees with this, they have to say so, because I might want to point to this as validating, like something that the WG is comfortable with, that we all want to respect and uphold the independence of the ombuds, that that is essential to the successful functioning of that role and that office, and that nothing that is in any of the recommendations or guidance is about compromising or reducing that independence or the independence of the board in exercising its fiduciary responsibilities in managing the engagement of the ombuds. So those are important pieces of context, so we might even be able to work into the implementation guidance to just restate at every point on the record as clearly as we can that the aim here is enhancing the independence and functionality of this role, which is an important one for the whole ICANN community. If anyone has any violent disagreements with that, please let us know. And we've got two final speakers on my Adobe Room, Cavus and Alan, and then we will go to an early coffee break. Sebastian as well. Where in that queue are you? We'll give you the closing, Sebastian, as the rapporteur for the group. So, Cavus?
Yes, I suggest for your consideration that the language should be: the panel recommends the board to consider firing an ombuds for cause and take necessary action as appropriate. It
Thanks.
Should be a balanced thing to consider them, to consider the situation, but take actions, necessary actions, as appropriate. That means putting some responsibility to the board, not rejecting without any argument, without any rationale. That is some soft language that has been worked elsewhere as a sort of a balance that I mentioned before. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I think that's helpful. Alan and then Sebastian.
Thank you. I just wanted to go on record that you said that if we make changes, we have to go out for public comment. I do not believe that is the case. We have to go to ratification by the AC's SOs. If they feel that their communities cannot live with that, they can make a statement of, to that effect at that point. So I do not believe a public comment would be required if we have to, if we make changes. That's a personal opinion, of course.
Bernie is a guardian of our process.
I'm the one who stated that, and I stated it as could. You know, this is a sub-bullet to a recommendation, and so I believe it's this group's decision.
Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Sebastian Machere. We are here struggling with what is the independence of the Ombuds Office, who is more capable to ensure this independence, and we think a good balance between the community and the board, who is not the case today, is better than the current situation. Therefore, I really think that what is the more important piece in that discussion, it's what will be the composition of the panel. And I don't know if it's something we can find a consensus now, when I say now, here in this group and with the board later today. But if we can, it will be a good step ahead. After what it's important, it's a panel start to function. I don't think the question of firing the ombuds will be the first question that this panel will have to face.
Therefore, I hope that the board will accept this, what it's under, into the brackets, even if I don't think that it's the best way to do it, but nevertheless, let's go. That the board accept that the composition of the panel will allow both knowledge of ICANN from some of the member and knowledge of the Ombuds Office from some of the member. And if it happens that one have two, have both, that's great, but it's not the goal of the composition of this panel. Now, how many member in each part of this panel need to be finalized, and I hope that we can do that in a short order. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Thanks. We'll need to work on some text, but this has been a really illuminating discussion here. Thomas, I think you had something else.
Yeah, Sebastian, just to confirm, you mentioned that you wanted to discuss additional comments. Is there anything that we could probably do before we break for lunch, before we break for coffee?
I would prefer not to mix the two topics, and therefore I would like to have a stop now because I need to reset my mind to change the topic. Sorry.
Okay, but then, you know, just as we're discussing ombuds now, I think it would make sense for us to get the ombuds topic resolved, so we will call upon you first thing after the coffee break. Is that okay?
And with that, we will adjourn a few minutes early, 18 minutes early for our coffee break, and I think we'll aim to reconvene at 11 as previously scheduled, so it's a slightly longer break, but we need to do a little bit of work up here. Thanks, everyone. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we can kick off. On the screen in front of you is the implementation guidance. Am I right in thinking that will also appear in the Adobe room? I am, yep, so thumb is up for that. And Bernie has just sent this paper around on the list as well. So I'm going to walk you through the document as a way of introducing the content. There's not a lot new here. The first part of this document just restates recommendation 5.8, which is about the Ombuds Advisory Panel. So 5.8, 5.8.1, 2, 3, 4. That's what's in the recommendation as well. It's just restated here. So if we could scroll down, please. Yeah, to the implementation guidance section. So the first paragraph just says that we prepared it following board raising concerns about independence at San Juan and Panama, explains how we expect the recommendations to be implemented. The next paragraph, which says unchanged at the front, is the same language that was presented to you on the slide earlier today. The panel is not meant to be a decision-making body. It's there to assist the board or the relevant committee with specific tasks enumerated. And then we say that the panel will only have the specific enumerated powers set out in the recommendation. So it's just restating what's already there. And rather than listing them all again, we're just saying that. So if you scroll over to the top of the next page. This is the new language, this first paragraph. In implementing recommendation 5.8.2.4, which is the recommend to the board firing an ombuds for cause, the CCWG advises that the board should prepare and publish information about the process any ICANN community participants can use to provide feedback about or raise concerns regarding the performance of the ombuds. So we want them to be clear about what the process is that anyone can use to raise concerns. The panel is welcome to offer feedback on the performance of the ombuds, but can only provide any feedback through this process, other than through the regular external evaluation. So what that's trying to do is to say there will be a process by which concerns about performance can be raised, and this panel can raise concerns through that process the same way as any other ICANN community participant. And then the reason the CCW suggests this clarification to preserve the right of the panel to raise any concerns with the performance of the ombuds function while not interfering with the board's responsibilities in managing the engagement of the ombuds and considering concerns raised in an appropriate way. So what this avoids is the board's concern about there being two parallel processes, about the ombuds going, oh, which of these do I have to pay more attention to, about the possible chilling effect of another body with a formal recommendatory role. And so that's what it's designed to tackle. And what we haven't proposed here is in actually changing the recommendation. And I'd note that the recommendation says that there should be a panel established and the panel should have these responsibilities. If there's going to be a panel, it's going to have a terms of reference drawn up as part of the implementation process. If the board is really stuck on the language in the recommendation about the firing, they simply won't include it in the terms of reference to the panel. They'll include a reference to this process. So hopefully this provides a way through for the implementation. So if I carry on, the next paragraph that starts with a changed format, that was the request of the board being how the panel would make advice about non-compliant work. That was shown to you earlier on, so it's just a different format. In the composition of the panel, now that we've clarified that decision-making process, we had advice that said a formal process to select the panel members should be created to first ensure that candidates must have significant experience and independence from the SO's ACs. The composition of the panel, as worded in the recommendation, says there will be some completely independent and some with familiarity with ICANN. We think that the appointment process should be able to square familiarity with ICANN and independence. So restating that second point, the requirement for ICANN experience is secondary, we're proposing not to make that advice because actually it is important that there be some understanding of how ICANN works for this panel to be able to do its job. And then it carries on as presented earlier today. The selection process may be designed in an appropriate means to achieve independence, such as board selection, independent recruitment, or other appropriate process. They'll post details regarding the process. So this is based on an exchange with board members at the break. It's designed to get us over the line here. We think it's a workable solution. And I'd welcome any comments or thoughts back in response. And I think it's been on the email list as well if you want to read it separately. I've got two hands up so far, Sebastian and Steve. Caboose just joined them, so Sebastian first.
Thank you very much. I need to read it again, and it's difficult for me to take that into account like that. But one point it strikes me, it's in the addition, if the board prepare and publish information about the process and define the process any ICANN community participant can use, and then you say the panel can be, but the panel is not an ICANN community participant. That it must be specified that any ICANN community participant and the panel in one way or another must be included. Because if the board set up a process where the panel is not asked to give his advice, we will have an endpoint here. Thank you. And I would like very much that I guess you say that we will receive it by mail. I hope that it's done. And if you give us some time to read it again and maybe not make a decision just now, but at the end of this morning session will be better for at least my point of view. Thank you.
Thanks, Seb. That's clarified that it went to the wrong email address, so hopefully it will be coming on the list very shortly. And I think it's implicit if we're saying that the panel can use this process, it has to be clear that the panel can use this process. So I think that's a point well made. Thanks. It is now sent again to the list, so hopefully it is on the list shortly. Next is Steve DelBianco.
Thank you, Jordan. Kudos for working this out over the extended coffee break. And I think it is clever and appropriate to change the channel via which the panel can make recommendations for firing. They have to channel it through the open process of soliciting feedback, if I see that correctly. That's why you don't have to remove the recommendation that we allow the panel to recommend firing. They can do so at any time through the ordinary, through the new channel of community-wide feedback. Do I have that right? Okay, great. Thank you. And the second question is on the screen in front of you, the last unchanged item suggests that appropriate means to achieve independence. And I'm seeking clarification if we mean independence from us in the community, ACs and SOs. Do we mean independence from the board itself or independence from the ombudsman office? And if we mean all of the above, then leave it alone. And yet, if we are reiterating independence from the ACs and SOs, then we are continuing to perhaps clash with the unchanged recommendation that 5 of the 7 have extensive ICANN experience. And that recommendation, coupled with a recommendation of having absolute independence from the ACs and SOs, would be irreconcilable. Thank you.
So, Steve, on your second point, I'm reading it as being consistent with the first part of the recommendation, which is that the panel we've made up of 5 members to act as advisors, supporters, wise counsel, made up of a minimum of at least 2 members with ombuds experience and the remainder with extensive ICANN experience. And as I said in my introductory comments, the difficult thing that the board is going to, the process to appoint this panel is going to need to juggle is ICANN experience and independence. So I expect that they be made complementary, not contradictory.
So in the unchanged part at the bottom of the screen in front of us, that word of independence is referring to independence from whom?
The sense of it isn't changed from the previous thing. So I think my interpretation of it is that it's meant to be independent from the work of the SOs, ACs, and the ICANN Corporation. And so that's why I'm saying it's a difficult juggling act, but it's being familiar with, but being independent from.
So I could be experienced in GNSO for a decade, but if I'm not a voting officer or a member of a GNSO constituency, well, I have achieved independence coupled with experience.
That sounds like a reasonable example to me, but I think this is the challenge that the fleshed-out process will need to answer. Yeah. So non-independence would be the GNSO Council Chair or the CCNSO Council Chair. I think that's, you know, at some point there will be a shade that happens. The next speaker on the speaking list is Caboose.
Yes, thank you very much for this text. I have 2 comments. 1 comment relating changed format. In the second line, the term work is mentioned. Work is too broad, too general. Perhaps one suggestion would be to replace that by function or action, but not work. Because work could involve anything, even coming to the office at 6 o'clock and leaving the office at 5 o'clock. This is work. And so, too broad, and so we are talking of functions, or we are talking of actions taken by ombudsman. And the second one, respect to the unchanged, the second line, it is a term significant experience, I think also is too strong. Suggestion would be either necessary or adequate instead of significant. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I have no view on the second point that you raise. On the use of the word work, the reason that the word work is used is because that in Recommendation 5.11, which that points to, the recommendation text says, and I quote, "The following points should be considered and clarified publicly when looking at ombuds involvement in any non-complaints work." And then it lists 5 or 6 bullet points about what that work might be. So the reason for the use of the word is that it is exactly the same language that is in the other recommendation. So it keeps a tight link between them. So work might not be the best word, but if we change it in this advice, we should also try and change it in the recommendation, and we're trying not to change the recommendations. So I agree with you in substance, but in process it would be easier just to keep the word work.
Is it possible to put the term works in between two inverted commas that would refer to something else which was already explained, at least? Thank you.
Yeah, I think we can manage that. Thank you. My next speaker is Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Just a very minor point. Sebastian said that the panel is not part of the ICANN community, and he's probably right. We may want to use words like or any ICANN entity, because it clearly is an ICANN entity, even though it's not part of the not a community entity. So words like that may suffice to cover both parts of it.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I think as long as we're clear on the substance that this panel can make recommendations through that process, that'll be the key thing to get right in the implementation. That's a good point. I see a mercifully clear speaking list. So there's a couple of suggestions of tweaks of this language and so on. But at this point, I'd ask if anyone has any fundamental objections with us proceeding with implementation advice on this topic in the way set out. The aim, as ever, is to get it over the line and get us out of here. Not just get us out of here, but get us completing this work. On that, okay, I'm not seeing any hands raised on that point. Steve's got a point, apparently.
It was just placed into the chat. I would ask you to reiterate whether the coffee break conversations give you a high confidence that legal and board will support these implementation guidelines. Thank you.
I've got, subject to them having seen the text, which they didn't as we wrote it after the discussion, I'm reasonably confident that this will be all right. And if not, at least everyone's intent will be clear and any responses will be in that context. So that's my view. Hopefully the co-chairs and staff share that view.
Yeah, I guess what we're going to do is if everyone so far is comfortable with it and understanding that Sebastian and potentially others want to have another read, we will send this over to the board. And then before we close the meeting, we can hopefully confirm that everyone is happy with it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Now I'm going to chuck it to someone else to do the next area of implementation. No, some more ombuds topics.
Yeah.
Thomas, I'm going to leave that one to you to chair.
Thanks very much, Jordan. And this will be the opportunity for Sebastian to introduce his point about other ombudsperson-related questions there might be, so that we can hopefully conclude with the ombuds part before we break for lunch. Sebastian, do you want to speak to that?
I wanted, it's a more general question, Sebastian Machere speaking. It was how we use the comments we received, and I understand that for the moment we just take into account the one we're pointing about any discrepancy, and therefore there were none of them, I guess, if I understood well. But I think that another point was to be taken, it's if there are something who could be dealing with two subgroup work, and one of them is the question link between diversity and ombuds. And I want just to explain why I didn't raise this issue before. As such, I made it in the comments, and I think that others have made some similar comments. It's that as I was a rapporteur of the ICANN Ombuds Office a subgroup, I didn't want to interfere with this work, this collective work, with my suggestion about doing something between diversity and ombuds. Maybe you will think that it's crazy, but it was my way of thinking. Therefore, I put the suggestion that the idea of diversity still need to be handled in a way more independent, and as the decision was taken not to create an office of diversity or whatever new mechanism, in that comment I suggest that we reinforce the role of the ICANN Ombuds Office in that direction. It's already something that the Ombuds have a role in the diversity, but I think that we need to reinforce it. Maybe it could be done through the implementation phase if you think that it's more appropriate, but I wanted to raise that issue. And it's not linked with the discussion we had about the Ombuds up to now in this morning discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. With respect to where to do that work, Bernie, is that something that you want to comment on?
No, not really at this point. Thank you.
Okay. So with respect to your question, I think that we will have to deal with this if and when the time comes. You know, I don't think that there's a structured mechanism for dealing with this now, because the report is done, you know, and whatever questions there might be, I think, need to be addressed when we see the implementation plan, which will likely be proposed by ICANN.org on behalf of the board, and then there will be opportunities to chime in and make yourself heard. I hope that sufficiently answers the question, Sebastian.
No, but yes.
I don't really see another avenue for us to take at this stage, given that the work of this group is about to end. So I think we all need to keep an eye open when the matter is being brought up to see whether there's anything that we need to chime in on. And that will be both for the community as well as for those who are taking a closer look at implementation oversight. Great. So with that, let's just briefly confirm to avoid any misunderstandings. We took your silence, except for Sebastian's silence, on reading the proposed language again as no objections being on the record for the time being, right? So we will get back to the clarification on the Ombuds panel towards the end of this session, not before lunch, but towards the end of this whole meeting, and try to get some feedback from the board as well. I would suggest that we use the remaining half hour to discuss the second point that was still open on the implementation. So maybe we can bring that back up on the screen. I think that the overview is in the slide deck that Bernie thankfully provided.
Yes.
And Bernie,
5.2.
I'd like to hand over to you for giving us a quick overview on where we are with the second point.
All right. Thank you, Thomas. You will remember that the transparency group issued a vast number of DIDP recommendations, 40-odd recommendations, if I remember correctly. The board did have issue with several of the, well, with three of the transparency recommendations, one of them being the DIDP exception for deliberative process should not apply to any factual information, technical reports, or reports on the performance or effectiveness of a particular body or strategy, as well as any guideline or reasons for a decision, etc. We posted implementation guidance on Wednesday, 20 June, which was edited versus what we had posted on 12 June. This 20 June version was the result of discussions between myself, Michael Karaniklis, and Steve Del Bianco, looking at how to address concerns that both these gentlemen had with the original 12 June version. After looking at what we had come up with, the co-chairs thought it was fair to recommend it. Steve and Michael thought it was good implementation advice also. So overall, we seem to have support on this. Next slide, please. So, rather straightforwardly, the first part of the advice is, for the sake of greater clarity, current publications of board briefing materials appear to fulfill this requirement. And just to give you a bit of background on this, the original recommendation was really based on copy-paste from some government requirements and maybe made it a little difficult to understand it in our ICANN context. And after going through it and going through all the materials that are currently published by ICANN and what is disclosed, it seemed to meet the requirement. In its comment, ICANN had pointed out that documents information already provided to a third party without obligation to keep as confidential should not be withheld simply because of deliberative process exception. So that was confirmed by ICANN that this is already in place. So overall, I believe we've got implementation advice that works for this. And back over to my co-chair.
Thanks very much, Bernie. Any comments on this from the floor? And Cavus, I think that your hand was raised with respect to the last point. And just to respond to that, we are providing a Google Doc with the amended language. So your suggestion will be reflected, and that's going to be shared. So it's on its way. Just wait for a few moments.
There were two suggestions. One is significant. And the other was, when we say experience on what? At least on the matter or something, because experience may be on anything. So we should refer to experience on something. Maybe the subject matter, that means ombudsmanship or so on, but not experience. Experience on what? Thank you.
So let's try to come up with the proposed language for everyone want to read. Thank you for that clarification, Cavus. And I don't see any comments in the group on this point on transparency. Cheryl is confirming in the chat that this is okay with her. Great. So 3, 2, 1. One down. Let's move to the next one. Thanks everyone.
5.3, please, on the slides. Open contracting. All right. This is going to be another popular one, I'm certain. This was another DIDP recommendation from the transparency group, recommendation 16. And I'm going to walk you through the whole thing, and then we will see where we go with this. So the recommendation was, wherever possible, ICANN's contract should either be proactively disclosed or available for request under DIDP. The DIDP shall allow ICANN to withhold information subject to a non-disclosure agreement. However, such agreements should only be entered into where the contracting party satisfies ICANN that it has legitimate commercial reason for requesting the NDA, or where information contained therein would be subject to other exceptions within the DIDP. such as, for example, where the contract contains information whose disclosure would be harmful to the security and stability of the Internet. So that's our starting point. That was the recommendation. That's what was approved in the May 14th letter from the board to the accountability. There were serious concerns by the board regarding this. Next slide, please. So this was one point that Michael Karaniklis and Steve DelBianco and I discussed following the 12th June posting. We could not come to an agreement with Michael on this one. And so we brought the situation to the co-chairs, and the co-chairs thought that the proposed implementation guidance made sense in our context, and asked that it be posted for consideration by the plenary. So I will repeat, and Michael will has since posted to the list. You will have seen his very serious concerns regarding the implementation advice that is being proposed, and that will be part of our discussion in a few minutes. Next slide, please. So the implementation guidance is as follows. As the recommendation starts with the language, wherever possible, we would recommend that ICANN publish a document clearly stating its position on the limited use of NDAs and documenting the information that it will make available on its contracted relationships as discussed below. Okay, so basically there was a little bit of grayness there, and what we're saying is ICANN needs to really clarify that as to what they will publish and what they will not publish, and that we have a really clear document on that. The second part is ICANN should annually publish a register of all suppliers. That includes the name of the supplier, the country of origin, and actual annual amount. It pays $500,000 U.S. or more per fiscal year, broken down by categories, category of supplier, computer equipment, software, telecommunication services, contracting, etc. The board should review this threshold amount on a regular basis to effectively ensure transparency. So, just to be clear, there is no such register right now. There is a requirement for ICANN to disclose any contracts that are approved by the board over $500,000. What we're saying here is not a contract. It's the sum total for a year for a supplier. So even if you have five $100,000 contracts, it reaches the limit and will get disclosed. So, and not only will it be disclosed, there will be a report, a single report annually, where all this information is brought together so that you don't have to go hunting everywhere. Part of the discussions we were having with Michael in writing this is, and I'm sure he'll make the point, was he felt we should include in the second part that this was only a starting point and that the board should commit to doing better over time. It was felt on the board side that it's unwise for the board to accept open-ended commitments like that. The issue being that the board has to manage the expectations and requirements for all the activities of ICANN and not just Workstream 2, and it's uncertain how they just don't take open-ended commitments like that. They were comfortable with the language. The board should review this threshold amount on a regular basis to effectively ensure transparency. So that's my background, and I'll hand it back to the co-chair at this point. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bernie. I see that Michael is not in the Adobe room. Do we know? Ah, he is. I must have overlooked him. Before we move to the queue, I'd really like to give the opportunity to Michael to speak to his position more so that everything's on the record. Michael, is this something that you want to do now? please give us a briefly, though, bad internet, he says. Well, the internet is not that bad. So, Michael, I think we should have participation possibility in the Adobe room. It's not listen only, right?
Can you hear me?
No, it's participation.
So,
can you hear me?
Michael, the floor.
Michael's calling
can
in.
You hear me?
His internet connection is bad if we look in the Adobe
okay.
tab.
Okay. Then while we're waiting for Michael, let's go to the floor first. But please do understand that I will give Michael the opportunity as soon as we have him online, and I'd like the tech staff to let me know once Michael is there. Cavus, you're first
online.
In line.
Can
please.
You hear me?
Yes, this comment is not an opposition, but just clarification. What was the basis and rationale to set the $500,000 as a limit? Where it come from? Come from the past experience, come from something, come from any particular suggestions, just a clarification. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. I'll let Bernie answer that.
I think as part of the discussions, the original version of this recommendation had $100,000. There was concern on ICANN on the amount of work to actually collate this information, because remember, we're not talking on a contract basis, we're talking on an annual basis. And so if you start getting to too small amounts, the work to actually get all that information to meet that requirement was a large concern. So there was a back and forth, if you will, and we settled on $500,000 as a starting point with no commitment that they're going to change it, but look at it.
Thanks very much, Bernie. Michael, we should be able to hear you now. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Just
welcome,
heard
Michael.
My echo. All right. Hi, thanks so much for that. So, as you saw, thanks so much for that introduction, Bernie. I wrote to Liz previously to express the substance of my opposition to both this recommendation, the implementation guidance for this recommendation, and the one on interactions with governments. I'll note that the fact that I didn't raise objections on the list to the implementation guidance around board transparency doesn't mean I don't think there's any issue with these additions. For the second recommendation in particular, I think that allowing the board to stray from the codified exemptions builds in a loophole which is contrary to the point of the recommendation. But that said, I didn't raise an objection to that on the list, because I still think that that recommendation, even with the implementation guidance, provides important progress, as it's phrased. So even though it has now had a loophole built into it, I would view that as an acceptable price for getting it through. The difference here, and the reason why I objected to this recommendation and to the one on the interactions with governments, is that in these two cases, I view the implementation guidance as totally undercutting the substance of the recommendations. And while I understand that the importance of addressing concerns that the board has raised, to do so in a way which is going to substantially have a negative impact on any effect that these recommendations are going to have defeats the purpose of what we're doing here. And it turns the victory of getting these through into a paper victory. So, as I mentioned on the list regarding this specific exception, the $500,000 threshold is enormously high. I don't see that as being consistent with the language in the recommendation that says contracts should be disclosed wherever possible. It doesn't say wherever easy or wherever convenient. It says they should be disclosed wherever possible. Now, that said, $500,000 is the highest threshold I've ever seen in any system. It's a moderate improvement, a minor improvement over the current practice. And so in going back and forth, I had suggested that the $500,000 be changed to $100,000, which is still an order of magnitude above what we find in most transparency systems around contracting, but is consistent with what we see at the World Bank, for example. So I viewed that as a decent midpoint. And then barring that, my hope was to get some sort of a broad commitment to progressive implementation, to this idea that this is a starting point or that the organization should aim to improve contracting transparency over time. Bernie says that the board views this as being, as tying their hands and forcing them down a path that they don't want to go down. I disagree with that interpretation. I think that it's a broad statement of values that gives the community something to hang its hat on if in future they feel that more should be done. So I would encourage either that the initial amount be lowered or that the there be something inserted into it to indicate that the community would want to see a progressive implementation. I am going to mention one other thing because I actually have to go probably after this. I'm not going to be around for the discussion of the interactions with governments. But just to build briefly on what I mentioned in my email, again there, I think it's very important to remove the reference to the DIDP because that's actually putting that into a document like this threatens to significantly expand the scope of the DIDP exception as it's understood and interpreted by ICANN. So it would actually be regressive to the transparency system and counter to what we're doing here. And beyond that, I think that the reason why I raised specific objection to including meetings within that is meetings can refer to virtually anything. So if you build in an exception to this transparency guidance, which says you don't have to disclose it if it involves a meeting and it involves discussing ICANN's public policies, that's a loophole big enough to drive a truck through. That completely undercuts the efficacy of this recommendation, such that I think that it'll lose all of its practical effect. So, in both cases, I think that the implementation guidance as currently written is definitely not in the spirit of the recommendations, and I think that they're both enormously problematic. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Michael. I hope that you will still be around for the remainder of this discussion. And thanks for speaking all your concerns to the record so that we have this on file, and even for those who haven't read your email, so that they all could understand your concerns. Let's now go through the queue. We heard Cavus already on the first point, so I think we can now move to Steve, please.
Steve DelBianco. Michael, I hope you can hear this, because the first part is to acknowledge and compliment you on the role that you played. You first came to this group and came to ICANN at the plenary meeting we held in Helsinki, I believe, and it was your sort of introduction to the world of ICANN. It was our introduction to what I've come to view as a fearless crusader for transparency on the part of governments, and I've learned a lot from listening to the way you explain and map to your experiences that you have. Having said that, I'm still conscious of the fact that ICANN is not a government, and it's not even an intergovernmental organization such as the World Bank, is cited in one of your comments. The World Bank is a treaty organization of governments. ICANN is a little bit of a different animal, a private sector-led organization that answers to the constituents, but not necessarily governments and taxpayer funding. So having said that, I'd like to address the concerns that you've raised, because I feel it's important, as since you're the rapporteur, that we give adequate recognition of your concerns and explain why, at least speaking for myself, why I believe that our proposed implementation guidance is appropriate. The dollar amount with respect to open contracting is clearly one that has to be thought of relative to the period of time covered by the dollars. When we looked at a $10,000 per contract, that threshold felt extremely low, but when one maps it to an annual expenditure with a vendor, not a per-contract expenditure, it's clear the number needs to be higher. And I appreciate your flexibility of suggesting that $500,000 could be appropriate on an annual expenditure, but in your words, only if it's seen as a starting point. So all of us in this room who've worked with ICANN would be quick to say to you that as a starting point is a meaningless improvement to the community's powers over the ICANN organization. Because as a starting point, without explaining what the next step is, who, how and when could anything be obligated upon the organization gives us nothing. And that is why on the call I held with you just last week, I hit upon a way in which we can operationalize your notion of progressive improvement. And that is in the implementation guidance, where I said that in scoping future ATRTs, that's accountability and transparency review teams, in scoping future ATRTs, SO and AC should consider if the information provided in the above register meets their requirements. Should they feel the need for improvements, they should request that the review consider this. So let me explain. We are currently in ATRT3, and every no less frequently than every 5 years, we'll have more ATRTs. In the new ICANN bylaws, the accountability and transparency review team is selected by the AC and SO chairs. It is not selected by ICANN or the GAC. That means that we, the community, control the composition of the review team. And what is it that the review team does on the first day it comes together? It defines a scope for what would be looked at in the ATRT. So the community controls the ability to scope their review to include, is the $500,000 threshold really appropriate? Are we seeing too little information here? And if so, they can make recommendations, and those recommendations have to be considered by the board per the bylaws. So I do think that we have covered off the thought you had in mind with as a starting point, but given it an operational mechanism as opposed to a sort of a meaningless statement that we will not be able to move ahead on. Regarding your interaction with governments, I think that we'll move to that next, but I'd like to put a bookmark there because I really believe that we have an appropriate response to this notion of the DITP reference on meetings. Michael, I hope you were there to hear this. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Steve, let's go through the queue first, and then I think we have to break for lunch because that's been booked for 1200, as you know, and then we continue our conversation after the after we reconvene. David, please.
Thank you, Thomas. David McCauley speaking for the record, and I just want to say two things here. One is a statement of understanding, and that is I want to state my understanding that with respect to the non-disclosure agreement portion of all of this, and I think this is important to say because that's been discussed in this implementation guidance, the compromise reached in the transparency subgroup was that for a party that's entering into a contract with ICANN convinces ICANN of the legitimacy of the need for a non-disclosure agreement, then that non-disclosure agreement will be treated like a contractual non-disclosure agreement in the typical course. That's my understanding of that this is still protected here, and I think that's important to state on the record. Secondly, with respect to the staff, with respect to the implementation guidance, I would like to note my personal support for it. I was part of the transparency subgroup. I recognize the hard work that was done by the leaders of the group, and there were times when we didn't always agree, but it was a good discussion. With respect to the staff guidance or the implementation guidance that we have on the screen, in my view, it strikes the correct tenor. Some of the impetus for the original recommendation came from the idea that ICANN should be treated like a government. And as ICANN stated in its remarks, it has neither the privileges nor the immunities that governments have. That's an important thing to keep in mind and to bear in mind. I think that Steve's idea of the ATRT review is a good one. I also think we need to keep in mind that ICANN is subject to annual audits by an independent third party that would probably surface issues that might arise in this respect. And so for where we are now, I think that this strikes the right note, and I rise in support of it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, David. Greg?
Thank you. Greg Shatton for the record. Just briefly, since both Steve and David said a lot of what I would have said, I support the recommendation. I also believe it strikes the right balance and strikes the right tone for an organization of ICANN's type, whatever that type is, but it's certainly not a governmental type as such, not a multilateral organization. And I think further, having been involved in many hundreds of contracts in my private career, it also strikes the right balance in terms of practicality going forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Alan?
Thank you. Uncharacteristically, I am speaking now on behalf of the ALAC.
What?
And I'm going to quote a short part of the comment we made. The recommendations formulated in the various sections of this report all have merit in advancing ICANN's transparency and accountability. However, taken together, they may amount to a daunting burden on the ICANN organization and its volunteer community. For this reason, the ALAC recommends that as recommendations are implemented, ICANN take an approach to minimize the impact and work associated with following these recommendations. During the discussions of this group, it was quite obvious to me, and I'm now speaking on my own personal behalf, that we were imposing potentially very large burdens on ICANN, not necessarily the ones that are listed on the screen right now. And when the issue was raised, I was told, well, governments can do it, then we should do it too. We don't print money, and we have certain other constraints that governments or international organizations don't have. And I think we have to be very vigilant as we go forward that all of this may advance ICANN's transparency, but a transparent organization that can't actually do the work it's here for because we're spending our time being transparent is of no value whatsoever. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Alan, I apologize. Jet lag. I mean, you both look so great that it's easy to, you know, to confuse the two of you. So we have Robin, Cavus, Jay, Christopher.
Hi, this is Robin Gross for the record. Yes, I wanted to back up what Michael has stated about these objections, or about his objections on these proposals. ICANN does engage in governance, global governance, in fact. While I understand it's not a government per se, what we're doing here is governance. And so that means we have to be a little bit more responsible than if we were just a private company and we only have to answer to our shareholders. I think the 500,000 number is enormously large. I understand the need to have a number that is both practicable and works to build transparency, but I'm afraid that the $500,000 number is just way too high. It completely eviscerates the recommendations, the transparency recommendations that we did. So I'm extremely disappointed to see the gutting of the transparency recommendations in this way through the implementation process. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Let's get back to that in a moment, but it's great to hear your view on this. Cavus?
Yes, I have two suggestions. The first one, if and only if we maintain 500,000, when we talk about the review on a regular basis by the board, we should inject the idea of taking into account recommendation of ATRT. That means we add another element on that, but not only board review that. Secondly, perhaps because I have heard pros and cons with 500,000 and one idea of 100,000 and some others saying they're too large, perhaps we should opt for something between the 100,000 and 500,000. So there are two suggestions, and I submit that for your consideration one by one. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Cavus, Jay?
Thank you. Jay Daly. And before I speak, I need to just give a declaration here. One of my clients is ICANN, and if the limit were 500,000, I would not be included in any disclosure. If the limit were 100,000, I would be included in a disclosure. Further, the reason I'm contracted to ICANN is to work on the Open Data Initiative, so anything that comes out of this would come out of a project I'm working on. So, having made that disclosure, I am not comfortable that the limit is set within this narrow framework of a negotiation with ICANN. There are plenty of external standards in use for contract disclosure, particularly through the US government, Open Contracting and Sunlight Foundation and various others. And I would much prefer that we took an external standard and we work to that external standard. My own view is that 500,000 is also far too high, and 100,000 for an annual contribution is much more in line with the external standards that you will see out there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jay. Christopher, where are you? Ah, over there.
Thank you, Chair. Christopher Wilkinson for the record. I shall be very brief because I have not participated directly very much in recent months on this topic. Naturally, I support the ALAC position, although I did not participate in its preparation. My view of this is that there are significant external and internal sources of discipline and efficiency which do not depend on ex post transparency. And I think as an organization, I can, should, in the first instance, rely on the results of efficient international competitive bidding for such contracts, that it should have, and I'm sure it does, a management structure which is fair and uncorruptible in the allocation of contracts, and that there is an audit procedure which would have to address these issues long before the community could get hold of the problems that might arise through this form of transparency. And finally, I think it's extremely important in terms of enlarging the scope for tendering for ICANN contracts that disclosure and transparency should not discourage new contractors from bidding for new contracts. Where this leads us in terms of this or that threshold, I'm not quite sure, but I did want to make the point that we are not relying, and ICANN should not rely entirely or even essentially on this form of transparency to achieve the efficiency and reliability and uncorruptibility of their contractual procedures. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Christopher. Robin, you put yourself back in the queue briefly because we have 1 minute past the hour.
Thanks. This is Robin Gross for the record, and I will be brief. I just wanted to ask a question because I think it might help us analyze this particular issue a little bit better. If we could maybe get some information back from staff as to what's the range number that we're talking about? How many contracts are we really talking about that reach this $500,000 threshold as opposed to the $100,000 threshold? What's that range as well? Because if we could see that, oh, this is only five contracts or, oh, this is 500 contracts, I think that would really help us to try to understand how workable is this, how practical is this, and what the right number should be. Thanks.
Thanks, Robin. So let's do the following. We will try to wordsmith a little bit over the lunch break, and following your suggestion, we will also try to get somebody here who can maybe inform our discussion a little bit more. On the previous point, there is updated language taking into account the various comments that have been made, so that either has been sent to the list or it will shortly be sent to the list, so please watch out for that. So I think we have 1 hour for lunch break now. Is that correct, Bernie? So we will reconvene at the top of the hour. And thanks so much for a good discussion this morning. And talk soon. Thanks to the remote participants. We will have the recording stop now and reconvene in an hour. Thank you.